House Judiciary come to order, and it's 5 minutes after the hour. Looks like we have a more ambitious schedule today than we really do. We're going to start with HB 173, which is abortion funding, and we'll go to, I think we'll go to HGR 10, and then we have HB 104 and HB 3, but we've already had a lot of public testimony and discussion on at least two of those, and one of them is just a cleanup, so it could go pretty quick today. So anyway, with us today is Representative Foster, Representative Ledoux, Representative Lynn, myself, Representative Keller, and we have a quorum. So I know that I don't want to move ahead before Representative Gruenberg is here on that 173. So let's go right to HGR 10, if you can find that in your packets. That's under bills previously heard. And I think that, well, no, there's no need. I don't think we need to sponsor unless there's questions. If one of you have a question for the sponsor, we'll contact her, but I think we can just act on the bill if you're ready. So is there any committee comments on HGR 10?
Find it here.
Yes.
I just want to say that I have received a number of communications just supporting it from rural Alaska, and so I just wanted to convey that. So
okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Definitely trying to find HBR 10 here.
Here's my copy if you like.
Okay.
While we're waiting, I think this is a great idea. I mean, I think this is something that is really needed for both rural and urban Alaska.
Right. And my comment on it is that, be it a good or bad idea, ultimately, I think it's a very good idea to let the people decide on. I mean, I have a hard time coming up with reasons to not let the people vote, but that's just my own concern. We started, Representative Gruenberg has just joined us. We started Representative Gruenberg with HGR 10, and we've had the discussion. The sponsor is not here. We can call the sponsor if there's questions for her, but I'm ready for committee action on the bill.
I will not oppose the movement of the bill. I will vote against the bill.
That's fine.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just for clarification and for the folks out there who may be curious as to what the legal process is here, this would require a two-thirds vote of the legislature to put it before the people, and then the citizens of Alaska would, if they supported it, would require a majority vote. That's correct.
That's exactly right. Thank you for putting on the record. I should have. I was negligent. Do we have action on the bill then?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
It's your pleasure. I would make a motion to move House Joint Resolution Number 10, 28-LS0133/U, with any amendments and any attached fiscal note. Yeah, with individual recommendations.
All right. Okay. Seeing no objection, the bill moves. We'll take a little of ease. Doing the paperwork. And it's that time of year, so there's going to be some juggling here today. Representative Gruenberg has a bill down the hall, and I have one upstairs. So Vice Chair Lynn will take over for at least one of the bills. And if I don't get back, then we'll go to Vice Chair Pruitt, assuming he will be here, and handle the bill that Representative Lynn has sponsored. So it'll be a little bit of juggling today. Okay, we're HB 73 version November is before us. We've had public testimony, extensive public testimony, lots of discussion between us. Are there further comments or discussion or questions from the committee?
By the way, it technically it's 173.
What did I say, 73?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, HB 173. Thank you for correcting me.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I was planning on introducing some amendments, but I will not offer them. I will oppose the passage of the bill and vote no on the bill, but I do not plan to offer any amendments.
Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. I appreciate you working for the expediency of the legislature. Thanks. So, Any other comments on the bill? If not, I'm ready for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill number 173, 28-LS0512/N, individual recommendation. I don't know that any amendments, and I don't think there's a fiscal note.
No,
I don't
think
so. Mr. Chair, just to put on the record, my statement of not offering any amendments today is not an indication of what will occur or not occur on the floor from myself or other members.
Right.
But I am, for the record, going to oppose the passage of the bill, ask for a roll call vote on the passage of the bill, moving to the bill out of committee.
That's no problem.
Fine, and once we have a motion on the floor for 173.
If you would amend it, there is a fiscal note attached.
Oh, yeah, and with the fiscal note attached.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a motion before us, and there has been discussion, and we will, I'll object myself just to, for your discussion and to take time to explain to Representative Pruitt where we're at in the process. Representative Pruitt, we passed HGR 10, which is the transportation funding resolution, and there's a motion before the floor to move HB 173.
Okay.
And so if you are okay with that, I will remove my objection.
Mr. Chair, as a matter of courtesy, I would be prepared to ask to rescind our action in passing HGR 10 if you want to sign the report.
I would love to sign the report.
Then I'll ask and ask unanimous consent to rescind our action in passing HJR 10 so we can take the motion and the majority leader can sign it.
No objection? Can I have another motion for HJR 10? Oh, wait a minute. We are right in the middle of it. I've got to think about how we did this.
Maybe I should withdraw that till we finish.
Yeah, would you withdraw that?
Let's go back to it.
These rules, you know. We try, us farmers. Yeah, so we'll continue on with HB 173, and please disregard the comments on HGR 10 for now. I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to pass moving HB 173 out of committee?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Please call the roll.
Representative Pruitt.
Yes.
Representative Gruenberg?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Ledoux?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
Yes.
Representative Millett is not present. Representative Keller?
Yes.
Four yes, two no.
Thank you. So HB 173 moves from committee. Now, Representative Gruenberg.
Okay, just let me make a note here.
I'll do an addies while I do the paperwork on this one.
Yeah, let's do that. Can we take an Addies for a second so I can get...
Okay. Back on paperwork's done. Representative Pruitt.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to rescind our action on HGR 10 and bring back for
Mr.
the
Chair. Fund. I don't know technically.
I'll object for comments on your because there is a motion here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You can't make a reconsideration motion unless you were here to vote on the original bill.
I think rescind.
I know. I don't know if that's true for a rescission motion, but I would.
I will remove it if. I will remove my motion.
Representative Pruitt withdraws his motion. Representative Gruenberg?
I move we rescind our action in passing out HJR 10.
Okay, I don't see any objection. So do you have a new motion for us?
Mr. Chair, I would move HJR resolution number 10, 28-LS0133/uniform. With a tax fiscal note and any amendments.
And individual recommendations.
Huh?
And individual recommendations.
Oh, and individual recommendations.
Okay. No objection.
Seeing no objection, HGR 10 passes from committee.
So good, it passes twice.
Yeah. For any explanation, if anybody missed what was going on there, that was to give Representative Pruitt a chance to vote. He just walked in a little at the wrong time, and he wasn't here for the vote. So. Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to go to HB 104, and that also is a bill that we have had before the committee, had extensive discussion, and then it was referred back to the Judiciary Committee for some changes, and Representative Pruitt is going to be explaining those. And what I'm going to do, I think, is go ahead and give the gavel to my vice chair and let him...
Find the bill first there.
Okay.
Just a question, Mr. Chair. I assume that the version we're looking at is the Judiciary CS / R.
R.
And I guess you need to have a motion. We don't.
No.
Okay, that bill's automatically before us. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative,
I believe we've actually dealt with it once since receiving it back. No, maybe we haven't.
No,
but
no,
he sent it back to us, so we're where it's open.
Yeah, yeah. It's
and it is R, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Okay.
You may use your book.
Okay. It's confirmed for the records that we're on version R, and I'm going to pass the gavel to Representative Lynn and go take care of a bill. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good luck on your bill and the other committee. We will now, I assume we are on record now, yes we are, we will now be hearing CS for House Bill number 104, Judiciary, and are there any, I believe we closed public testimony on that before, are there any amendments to HB 104?
Mr. Chair, I move amendment number one, which would be the R.5.
Move amendment number one, R.5, any objection for discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. This was actually at request of the Department of Elections. What they recognized is that they had, by moving it to the second Tuesday, they had an unintended consequence, and that was to potentially move the any initiatives would be moved to the general ballot, and they're currently on the primary. That's a whole different policy discussion that we can have at this point in time if we want, but that wasn't their intent. So we are moving it to the third.
Okay. Any questions for the member of the sponsor? Representative Gernberg.
I would like to hear from the Division of Elections.
Okay. Is somebody here in the Division of Elections? You thought you were through, didn't you? Please identify yourself for the record and give us your opinion on the proposed amendment.
Gail Finamia, Director, Division of Elections. The proposed amendment, excuse me, as Representative Pruitt did present, would move, would maintain that the ballot initiatives would appear on a primary election ballot. Had the primary stayed at the second Tuesday in August, that would have moved the ballot initiatives to the general election ballot.
Any other questions? Ms. Finamia. Okay.
I have.
Representative Gernberg.
Thank you. I know what it does, the amendment. Why did you initially, if I may through the chair, please.
Yes,
through the chair. May dialogue here. Why did you initially have it for the second Tuesday?
Vice Chair, through Vice Chair Lynn, Representative Gernberg, the division picked the second Tuesday in August to allow us an additional 2 weeks. This amendment was not proposed by the division, but the division was asked for information about facts as to what it would do for ballot initiatives, and we provided that information to the requester. Moving the primary to the third Tuesday in August obviously would give the division an additional week of time, for which we're grateful for. It beats keeping it where it is at the fourth Tuesday in August.
If I may.
One more.
Well, I may have more than one more question.
One and a half more.
Tell me how. Okay. I'd like to explore this with you. When did you come to change your mind on going to the third Tuesday from the second Tuesday? When did that change?
Through the Vice Chair of Gruberg. As I mentioned, this was not the division's amendment. I think perhaps Representative Pruitt might like to speak to this.
I really want to say real quick. I may have misspoke. I said the division, and that was actually incorrect. It was a member of the administration that approached me on it. It was not the division, because they recognized that there was an unintended consequence, and they asked me to look into it further. I did. It was not Ms. Fanumiai, and I should clarify that, and I apologize if that was that I did say that, and that wasn't incorrect by saying that earlier. So,
if I may,
Representative Greenberg
was. To Representative Pruitt. My question was, on the initial Section 19, mm-hmm. the current language, was that put in when a member of the administration came to you, or are you referring to the amendment here?
I'm referring to the amendment was a request.
That was not my question.
Okay. I'm
through the chair, please.
Through the chair.
If I could.
That was not my question. My question was the genesis of the current Section 19 in the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Pruitt.
I can't speak to the current language of why it's the second.
That was my question.
And if I could continue, do know, though, that there was concern that it had an additional policy call by moving it to the second that has been identified, as Ms. Fanumiai mentioned, and that I don't believe was the intention of the administration when I don't know about the division, but that was a different policy call that I don't believe they were at the time ready to make. And I agree with them. I think that that's a huge policy call that I'm not intending to make with this piece of legislation of whether or not we're going to move all our initiatives from the primary ballot to the general. And I think it's appropriate to give them the time that they need by moving it to the third instead of the second, moving it to the third so that we do not make that change.
I understand. If I
may. Representative Grunberg.
Ms. Fanumiai, whose idea was it initially to go to the second Tuesday?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg. It was the division's decision to propose the second Tuesday in August.
I see. And nobody considered, if I may.
Please.
And nobody considered the effect this would have on the date people would vote on initiatives. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that's correct. That did not play into the reason the date was chosen. The division picked that date for administrative purposes to allow, full 2 weeks of extra time to prepare ballots for the general election following the primary.
Do you need through the?
Well, I'm wondering, is it important how we got to the state of this
through this
amendment here, or whether we should or should not pass the amendment?
I'm passing from having heard that. I'm passing on to the next phase of the question, if I may.
Yes, but I mean, it's interesting the path we followed to get to this amendment. Is interesting, I'm more concerned about whether we should or should not pass the amendment.
Yeah, I'm not going to. I'm finished asking that.
Thank you.
Is there going to be any adverse effect only giving you one more week to prepare these ballots rather than two more weeks?
Through the chair, Mr. Gruberg, I don't think there'd be any adverse effect. No, it gives us an additional 7 days. Versus, only having 3 days right now currently to do that. And so I think the division would be able to accommodate in getting ballots ready out for the general election.
If I may, Mr.
So as I understand it, this doesn't burden the Division of Elections too much.
Mr. Chairman, no, because it is giving us more time than we currently have now. More time would have been the division's preference, but we'll accept an additional 7 days over no days.
Reverend Grunberg.
How many people statewide vote in the primary, and how many people statewide vote in the general?
Through the chair, Representative Gruberg, I don't have the exact numbers, but percentage-wise, the primary varies anywhere from 28 to 30, maybe 40%. Maybe I can't swear that without looking. The
numbers, not percentages.
So that would probably be 125, 150,000. I'm just guessing without looking. The information's on our website, and I can get statistics to you later.
To the amendment?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
The general election is in the 200,000 range, upper 200,000. I believe it's anywhere between 50 and 60% of our registered voters, and we currently have, during the general election last year, we had over 500,000 registered voters, and it was about a 55% turnout, so 280-some thousand people. I'm trying to do math in my head.
If I may. So the difference in raw numbers between the number of people who vote in the primary and the number of people who vote in the general is somewhere between 50 to 75,000 more people vote in the general than in the primary, right?
Through the chair, Mr. Gruberg, approximately, like I said, I don't have exact numbers, but it there are more people who participate in a general election versus a primary election.
Deputy Pruitt, you had a comment?
No, I'll wait until he's through, but yes, okay. I do.
But explain to me how this pertains to Amendment Number 1. I'm sure it does, but I don't see it.
You will see with my next question.
Okay.
So, if we make it, change this bill so that the initiatives are voted on in the primary versus the general, that will be anywhere from 50 to 75,000 people less who will vote on each initiative, right?
Through the chair, Mr. Gruberg, that could be the case, but it may not be the case. The ballot initiatives appear on the primary election now, currently. This is not a change. They currently appear on the primary election. I think it just depends on how important it is to voters to turn out to vote. I can't tell you from one primary to the other if turnout's going to be up, if it's going to stay steady. I think it's a matter of individual voter choice. Depends on if there are initiatives on the ballot that are important to them, if the issues on the ballot, if the candidates on the ballot. I couldn't guarantee that this is going to continue to mean that. I don't know.
Just one more question. So
this is one more after the last one. Okay, go ahead.
Well, yeah. So turning it around, if we change this so that it would be onto the primary rather than the general, if people in the general election are voting on initiatives rather than the primary, that will mean, turning your statement around, anywhere from 50 to 75,000 more people will get to vote on initiatives if we have it on the general than on the primary, right?
Through the chair, Mr. Representative Gruberg, potentially if the statistics continue in the same manner in which they have in the past.
Thank you. 50 to 75,000 people.
Okay, Reverend Pruitt, would you like to make a comment on this? I see you.
I would like to. Oh, I'm eager on this one. Here's one of the things that's a concern of moving it to a general. Is a general already is flooded with substantial amounts of ads, money, et cetera, where you have, let's just use 2014, we're going to have a governor's race with lieutenant governor on that. We're going to have a senatorial race, congressional race, and every little race underneath it. If there's an important initiative, it can get lost in the morass that is everything else going on. And whereas in a primary, there is more opportunity for people that are going to take the time to go out and vote to understand the decision that they're making on an initiative, because it will not get lost in the general. And I think it's a huge policy call, and it was an unintended consequence of the initial decision by the Division of Elections to move it there. I think if we're going to address that, instead of addressing it in this, maybe we address it separately, but I think that it's best to keep them at a primary where people can understand better what they're voting on when it comes to an initiative, instead of getting lost in the morass of everything else.
Any comments, other folks? Representative Ledoux?
Yes, I think that you could argue it either way, where it's best for the initiative to be. But maybe that needs to be a discussion in and of itself, as opposed to kind of on the cuff making that decision. And I mean, I can really see, you know, the arguments both ways for where it is best to place an initiative. So I think with that, that enables me to support this amendment.
Okay. One more?
Well, I'd just like to respond to this. First of all, huge, quote, policy decisions. We are now having in a by-election for senator, U.S. senator or representative, a special runoff election. That's a pretty big call in and of itself. I don't see why this particular change is any bigger. You know, it was not until we passed the initiative legislation about 5 or 6 years ago, that it changed for all these initiatives to go on the primary. It used to be for all the years since statehood, they were on the general election. And having been here along with you, Mr. Chair, there wasn't much discussion on this huge issue at the time. It's going to be a huge issue. You talk about a huge issue. If, for God forbid, we allow 50 to 75,000 more people to vote on these very important initiatives, that's important. And what Mr. Representative Pruitt was saying sounded like he was afraid that people couldn't digest the information as a result of an initiative. Well, our ballot is much shorter than the ballots in almost every other state, and voters don't seem to have any problem. I think our electorate could very easily digest that information, and this is so important. I'd like to see 50 or 75,000 more people get to vote on initiatives. That's the overriding principle.
I take that mean to mean that you oppose the amendment. Representing Ledoux.
I'm going to just make one comment. When you talk about allowing people, that the way that this is going to work now is that you're somehow or other disenfranchising people by not allowing them to vote. If people want to vote, anybody can vote during the primary. It's not a matter of whether you're allowing people to vote or not. So, at any rate.
Okay. Any comment from from the bush?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to say one more thing, if I may.
One more thing, then we're going to either move rejection or have a vote or whatever.
I think this is going to have a disparate effect on people who are not right down the street from a voting place in August. People who are out fishing or subsisting or whatever else. In my district, nobody has to go more than a quarter mile, half a mile to a polling place. But in other parts of the state, they've got to go a lot farther than that. And I'm not trying to influence anybody's vote.
Surely not.
I think this is going to have a different effect. Well, may I ask Ms. Fanumi another question?
Ms. Fanumi, are you ready for another question? Representative Grunberg.
I asked you gross figures, state as a whole, and you told us as best you could. In certain election districts, is the difference between the number of people voting in the primary and the number of people voting in the general greater than that, proportionately?
Through the chair, Representative Greenberg, I couldn't venture a guess, but I mean, if you apply, one would assume that the number of people voting in each district in the primary is considerably lower than in the general election, but I can't.
Could you get that information for me in writing?
I can put some statistics together.
Yeah, because I want to see the effect district by district. I have a feeling that certain districts are more different because people are dispersed more. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Better be more different any time of the year. Do you maintain your objection?
I do.
Okay. Would you call the roll?
Representative Millett is not present. Representative Pruitt?
Yes.
Representative Grunberg?
No.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
Yes.
Representative Keller?
Not present.
Is not present. 4 yes, 1 no.
Okay. With that, Amendment Number 1 passes. Are there any other amendments?
Amendment Number 2, Mr. Chair.
Amendment Number 2?
Move Amendment Number 2, which is R.4.
Okay. Amendment Number 2, R.4. Would you, there's any objection for discussion? If no objection, the amendment passes.
Thank you.
Oh, wait a second. I got a note here, and I'm sorry, I wasn't looking at the amendment. Could I take a look at this? We'll just have a minute.
So you're going to post a late objection?
I just would like to wait for a minute to read the amendment.
Yeah. Reverend Pruitt, while he's reading the amendment, would you verbalize the amendment for the
vast
audience out here?
Really, what it is here is it's a request that allows political parties to handle their paid for by a little different than, say, for instance, all of the other i.e., the independent expenditures, et cetera, that may be out there. Both political parties, the main political parties, the Republicans and the Democrats in this last election, neither one of them had the appropriate disclaimers on the bottom. They both recognized that this was a concern. Why was it a concern? Because we were asking them to identify the top three contributors when they could have a whole bunch of top three contributors. Because once you hit $5,000, that's all you can give to them. I think the idea behind the top three contributors was intended for independent expenditures. And I understand that the parties also agree with this this scenario. And it allows them to basically indicate who is paid for it very clearly, and that's what we've done in here, allowed for it to be very clearly be indicated who is paying for it, which is the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. They still have to go through all that, but instead of identifying top three, which would be the three people that they want to select out of the whole group, and basically takes up space and time, it allows for them to get more message out. And not have to deal with selecting three people, which could have.
Okay, can you give me an example of it? For example, in our house campaigns, we put down
your house.
My house campaign, we put down paid for by Joe Jones.
So your house campaign would not change.
Would not change.
It would
no
still
house
be paid okay. for by Bob Lynn for state house or whatever you do, and then your address. An independent expenditure. So I'm trying to think.
An independent expenditure.
Like, they would still have to put their top three.
That's like the Citizens United or United.
Exactly. Citizens,
whichever it is.
Yes.
And this pertains to political parties only?
Just political parties. It only pertains to political parties.
And so political parties today, but paid for by Republican Party, paid for by Democratic Party,
right.
or whatever party.
Exactly.
And this would change it to what?
Yeah, what they did is actually today they'll put paid for by Democratic Party and maybe their address, and it still requires them to say that it was not paid for by that it was not approved by a candidate. But it basically allows for where now they would have to say that, you know, well, Democratic Party, Representative Gruenberg and Representative Pruitt and whoever are the top three contributors, even though there may be 20 maxed out contributors. It just both parties they didn't do it. They both neither one of them
because political parties, whatever they are not in the same category.
They're not in the same
independent
category.
Expenditures
exactly.
As your Citizens United ruling.
Exactly. So they both everyone all, the parties. It's not. It's really actually. It's not. It benefits all of the parties. It doesn't benefit one group. But it was something that they didn't do in the last campaign, and they really didn't need to. We figure, why not just allow them to just do what they did this last campaign? No one complained about all that stuff. Or maybe they did, and this will take care of some of the bickering that may occur there off the top three and that.
Any questions or comments on that? Representative Gruenberg.
First of all, I don't know that Ms. Fenumia needs to be up here for this.
No,
she's welcome to be there.
I do have some questions. To Representative Pruitt through the chair. You said the parties support this. Have you received something from the Democratic Party supporting this?
The parties have indicated that both parties both parties violated this last year. And my understanding from talking to, I've spoken to individual from my party, and that right. they have talked to individuals from the other party. They didn't give me a letter saying they endorsed it or something, but they both benefit from this. Neither one of them did it correctly this last year. Actually, and to tell you the truth, my understanding is that the Democratic Party was actually the larger violator this last year. This benefits both. They're both going to be on an even playing field, and it actually assists both of them.
May I continue, please?
Yes, Representative Gruenberg.
Just 1 minute. Excuse me, I'm reading a... Oh, okay, good. Thank you. I don't know how my party feels about this, but the thing I'm concerned about is that this is less disclosure, and that goes exactly contrary to what we've been doing in the past around here. Because of Citizens United, persons in the broad sense, people, corporations, etc., can give unlimited amounts to issue elections, and they can give money also to candidate, as I'm certain people can't.
Not unlimited to political parties.
Pardon me?
Keep us on the loop here, please.
Yeah, sorry, Mr. Chair. I was just saying, but not unlimited to political parties or to candidates.
No. But this will allow political parties to conceal their support or opposition.
No, Representative Gruenberg, is there not such a thing as APOC?
Well, but this says you don't have, if you're a political party, you don't have to have that listed in a paid for by disclosure at the end of the ad. Isn't that what this says?
No. I did not say that.
Representative,
thank you. All communications shall be clearly identified by the words paid for by.
Yeah.
Does not change that. It adds in identification of the name, city, and state of residence or principal place of business as applicable of each of the person's three largest contributors, under, if any, under the 12-month period before the date, is under the, the person's, I need to start at the top, I apologize. An exception, except as provided by D of this section, a person shall clearly provide the person's address and the person's principal place of business, that would be for an individual. For a person other than an individual, they need to include the name and title of the person's principal officer, a statement from the principal officer providing the communication, and write the, I'm getting lost here. I know it does not do that. It still says paid for by, and that was part of the requirement. Give me a second, because I'm trying to go back.
If I may, we have, somebody may be able to clear it up. We have Paul Dufresne from APOC online.
Thank you.
Maybe he could contribute to this. Or not contribute, I suppose, but he may, if he wants to, contribute. Paul Dufresne, are you online?
I am, Mr. Vice Chair.
Please identify yourself, and you've heard the discussion, have you?
I have, Mr. Vice Chair. My name is Paul Dufresne. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Public Offices Commission. The way I understand the amendment that's being proposed, it would exempt political parties from listing the top three contributors if they make an independent expenditure. It would not exempt the political parties from retaining the paid-for-by language, which would identify the party.
May I inquire, please?
Yes, please.
So, Mr. Dufresne, I think I'll get it. Mr. Dufresne, so the party wouldn't have to say who the biggest contributor to the party was. Is that it?
Through the Vice Chair, Representative Gruenberg. That is correct, sir.
I see. So yes. As it is now, if there's something that the party does, then on each one they would have to say, the biggest contributor to the party was Joe Doakes, Janie Smith, and Jim Brown. But they wouldn't have to say those names if this amendment passes. Is that what you're saying?
Through the Vice Chair, the Representative Gruenberg. I didn't catch the very first part of your question, but what I could understand of the rest, what you're saying is essentially correct, sir.
I see.
Representative Broad.
So, thank you. I want to go back to Section 9. The Section 9 does clearly state that they have to, the political party still has to say this communication was paid for by Republican Party, Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting lost here. It's what Representative or what Paul has stated is exactly the intent, and that's what this does. It just takes the top three. They still have to put the disclaimer where right now you can have 20 people that max out to a party, and you just pick the three that you want to identify. It doesn't make sense, and they weren't doing it anyways. We're just trying to just, instead of create the back and forth, and you know how it goes even between the political parties, they'll, hey, you violated. Let's bring it back to, let's make it simple, allow them to be able to communicate. But if you're an independent expenditure, this does not apply to you. If you're an independent expenditure and you give $25,000 and someone else gives $20,000 and all that, you still have to put the top three. This is just political parties.
I understand.
So.
I understand. Well, with that, Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to vote no just because I'm not comfortable with it. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I want to do a little more research on this, and it may be just fine, but I'd like to find out. I'm ready to vote.
Okay. Call the roll, please. A little louder, you're not on the figure.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lynn.
Yes.
Representative Millett, not present. Representative Pruitt.
Yes.
Representative Grunberg.
No.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Linden.
Yes.
Representative Keller, not present.
Okay, you hear the roll call. What was it?
4-1.
4-1, thank you. So I believe that was amendment number 2 that passes. Any other amendments?
No, I'm good. I've had enough fun for today.
Me too. Okay, any other comments on HB 104?
I could say something about having enough fun for today, but I won't.
Me too. Now, let me get this straight. Have we already closed public comment on it? I think we have we not?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so public comment is closed. Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair, I see we have a number of visitors here. And
I think they're for a different bill.
Oh, it's for a different bill. It's not for this bill.
Anybody in the audience who wants to testify on HB 104, please hold up your hand. Okay. Is there anybody online who wants to testify HB 104? Then I will, if I had not closed public testimony before, I close it now. I'll bring it back to the committee for any discussion or for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I will move HB 104 from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes, and that should be the version R.
Okay. Any objection? Representative Grunberg.
I am not going to interpose an objection to the movement of the bill. I will vote an amend.
That's fine. Okay. So HB 104 moves from committee to its next destination. We'll take a time out here while we do the paperwork. The House State Affairs Committee will please come back to order. The next bill up for consideration has been heard previously is HB 3. And since I'm the sponsor of that bill, I'm going to request that Representative Pruitt hold the gavel for this portion of this hearing. Representative Pruitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. I guess we just need to introduce it. So with that being said, do you have anything that you'd like to add, or would you like to add?
Well, very, very briefly, I did have an opening statement in the last hearing, and the major point I would like to make is that nothing in this bill would restrict anybody who's currently registered to vote and motivated to vote from voting, wherever they live in the state, whether it's in an urban area, rural area, on an island, or wherever. If you're registered to vote and motivated to vote, you can vote. The only thing you have to do, you have about 4 choices here. You can show appropriate photo ID. Probably everybody in this room has a photo ID, and probably everybody in this building has one also. Secondly, you can show 2 forms of some kind of government identification. I'm sure most people have that. If that doesn't work, you can be recognized by 2 election workers, and that's especially appropriate out in the village, out in the bushes. Bush, because everybody knows everybody out there. And if none of those top 3 work, then of course you can cast a question or provisional ballot. And I don't think any of that is too onerous for anybody in Alaska to vote. And I may have some other comments later, but Mr. Chair, that's my opening statement. And I have Forrest Wolf here, my staffer. Maybe we can fill in some of the details.
Before I get to Representative Foster, I do want to make sure that everyone has the correct version. Can you confirm which versions are in front of you? Forrest, which version should we be on for sure?
I believe still through the chair. For the record, my name is Forrest Wolf. Staff, Representative Bob Lynn. I believe the current version of the bill is this version U.
Okay. Does everyone have version U?
Yeah.
All right. Seeing looks like agreement, Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At what point is it appropriate for me to introduce an amendment? Would that be now or after we have some committee discussion?
I would request that we wait until we have some public testimony, and then we'll go ahead and take up that amendment.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any questions for Representative Lynn or Forrest on questions, concerns for the bill? Forrest, do you have anything to add?
Let me do my little spiel here. Through the chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Forrest Wolf, and I'm staff to Representative Bob Lynn. HB 3 is a proactive measure which seeks to secure our elections while also respecting Alaska's unique voting population. Many of our elections are decided by a handful of votes, or in some cases, even a coin toss. Because of this, every vote truly does count, and even one case of voter fraud is one case too many. Under HB 3, the simplest way for the majority of Alaskans to vote is to provide their driver's license or other photographic identification. Recognizing that for some Alaskans, obtaining a photo ID may be more difficult, the bill also allows for a voter to present two forms of non-photo ID, such as a birth certificate, social security card, hunting and fishing license, voter ID card, tribal ID. We could also use something like your hairdresser's license, or if you're licensed to practice any sort of medicine in the state, you could use that as well. As long as it's a valid identification card or license or permit issued by any branch, department, agency, or entity of the federal government or the state, you can use two of those to vote. I would like to point out that when registering for the PFD for the first time, you are required to submit an original or certified copy of a birth certificate to the division. There are absolutely no exceptions to this policy, so it would seem that if a voter in Alaska receives their PFD, they would also have their birth certificate. Further, in order to receive public assistance from the state of Alaska, such as Medicaid or food stamps, the Division of Public Assistance requires an applicant to present them with a photo ID, social security card, and a birth certificate prior to being approved. So it would appear that if a voter is receiving some form of public assistance, they would have access to at least some of the acceptable documents under HB 3. We've heard in previous testimony in other committees that in order to receive services from IHS, which is Indian Health Services, you are required to present your tribal ID or certificate of Indian blood. Both of those are also acceptable documents under HB 3. If a voter is still unable to provide any combination of the two non-photo IDs or a photo identification card, HB 3 has a provision for these identification requirements to be waived as long as two election officials as long as the voter is known by two election officials and these election officials are willing to sign their names next to the voters in the register. We've also heard in previous testimony, again, in another committee, that the majority of the villages in the YK Delta are using the current form of the identification waiver that's written in the current statute to vote. HB 3 simply increases the number of election officials from 1 to 2 and requires the officials to place their name next to the voter. So if a fraudulent vote was cast, the state could also hold these election officials responsible as well if they're going to fraudulently vote that way. Finally, if a voter cannot meet any of these requirements, they may always cast a question ballot. In your bill packet, we've included an example of this question ballot form to show you exactly how easy it is to fill out. Question ballots count just as much as any other vote. There is not any cumbersome process to go through, any extra cumbersome process to go through, other than filling out this very simple form. Once again, HB 3 really seeks to do nothing more than make our elections more secure, and we feel it does so without disenfranchising any voters. With me today, I have Gail Funumiai from the Director of Elections, Gail Funumiai, Libby Bachlar from Division of Law in the Attorney General's Office, and then I also believe I have Alpheus Bullard online as well from Legislative Legal Services. So I guess that wraps me up.
Representative Ledoux.
So if somebody votes a questioned ballot, how does the Division of Elections figure out whether the question ballot is actually voted by the person that they say they are?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I might ask Ms. Funumiai to come up and answer that question a little more thoroughly. The way I understand it is when you fill up the question ballot form, which you should have an example of, you're asked to list one of your identifiers. This could be your birth date, your social security number, your driver's license number, what have you. And as long as the Division of Elections can match up the identifier that you've marked with your voter registration in the database, in the voter registration database, then your vote would count. Do I have that right, Gail?
Oh.
Okay. Do you need Ms. Fanumiai here? Ms. Fanumiai, if you would please come up, put your name on the record.
Gail Fanumiai, Director, Division of Elections. A question ballot. The information provided on the envelope is compared to what's currently in the voter registration system. The identifiers are what is in our system. The person is previously registered to vote. The ballot would be counted accordingly, depending if they were voted in the proper district or not.
Follow up.
So for both question ballots and for, you know, your general absentee ballots, if somebody knew your birthday, they could actually vote a ballot for you, huh? Is that correct?
Through the chair, let me look at the statute exactly. I believe it's your date of birth is required as well as another identifier. So let me look at the statute here and clarify that for you.
Through the chair.
Please continue.
I voted many absentee ballots. I thought it was either your driver's license, your date of birth, or your Social Security, one or the other of those.
Through the chair, Representative, that's for absentee by mail ballots. An absentee by mail ballot process is different from a question ballot because we go through a validation process when you apply to vote. You have to apply, provide identifiers, make sure that the identifiers again match what's in the system, and then you are sent a ballot based on the fact that you've submitted a valid absentee by mail application.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
This is to Mr. Wolf. I very much appreciated your testimony. And normally I don't do this, but you said so much, and you were going so fast, and I have such a bad cold that I didn't copy it down. I'd like a copy of your written testimony, and then I'll be able to read it slower and understand it. Thank you. I don't know if anybody else wants a copy, but I would. Yeah, maybe you can just make copies. Thanks.
Another copy, or also want to say something?
Question?
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gail, I received a letter sometime in the past year from the Division of Elections stating that Diomede would be losing its polling site because they were having a hard time finding people to manage the site, to allow people to vote. Are you familiar with that?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, yes, that was during the redistricting process when we were trying to establish our precincts, and some of the precincts where we continually, year after year after year, have a difficult time finding election workers. We were polling legislators and community members to find out what their thoughts were on closing the precinct. The Diomede precinct did not close. It stayed open. We were able to find two election workers there to help us out with the election.
Okay. So it sounds like it was at risk at one point of closing, and my concern is I don't know that Diomede is the only situation where either that's currently a problem or as we're seeing some communities decrease in population where it could become more of a problem to potentially close a site down because you've had a hard time finding one person. And so my concern would be, if we're having a hard time finding one person, then some places it would be hard to find two people. And so the third provision of two people vouching, for somebody, I guess, would just be a concern of mine in rural Alaska. And I don't know, Forrest, if you have any thoughts on that. But, certainly that would be a concern of mine. And that is the third provision of So the first provision is either you have a driver's license, a photo ID. The second provision would be if you don't have photo ID, you provide two pieces of non-photo identification. And then the third provision is if you can't meet either of those, then as long as two people in the community can vouch for you, that you would be allowed to still vote. And so my concern was, I think in some communities, you know, where we've had a problem in Diomede where they almost shut down because they couldn't find one person, it's going to be even more difficult to find two people in some of these small communities. So anyway, I just put that out there. And so
through the chair, Representative Foster, it's my understanding that every election or a polling location will have at least two election officials working there, I think. Actually, it might be anywhere from 4 to 6, I thought, is what Gail has said in previous testimony. So I guess if that's the policy of the Division of Election, I don't really see the problem.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Foster, we strive to have a full board. But as you know, in some locations, it's very difficult to get a full board of at least 4 workers. And we're thankful for when members of the community step up. And we have had places, it's been a very rare that we've had 2 people, Diomede probably being an example. If there is only one worker there, the way the bill is crafted is if there's no ID, you don't have the other 2 forms, you don't have a photo ID, you don't have the other forms of identification available, and you're not personally known by 2 workers, you can vote a question ballot then, and you'd have to go through that process. The two official thing also is could be an issue in some of those single site absentee voting locations where there usually is only one absentee voting official.
Thank you.
Representative Foster, please can follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess this raises a potential unintended consequence, and that is, not only might it be difficult to find 2 people in small communities. I've got some communities that have fewer than 100 people in them. For example, I believe Keokuk and Diomede's pretty small, and some of I've got 68 communities in my district, and they're all very, very small communities. But the unintended consequence is that Diomede was at risk of losing its polling site because, just trying to find somebody to man the stations. But now if you increase, if you say, well, there needs to be at least 2 people, because right now only 1 person can vouch, but if you need at least 2 people to vouch, then that means that potentially the Division of Elections could come back and say, well, because there's this higher standard now, and we can't find the people that we need, is it possible that more communities could lose their polling sites?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, the division is allowed to supplement an election board. Like if you can't find election workers, we're allowed to turn that precinct into an absentee voting location. But then again, you do go to the fact that you probably only have 1 person manning that station versus the required 2.
Follow up.
Can you explain that? If so, on the one hand, you can have a place where a person can go and they can take a ballot and they can vote, or you're saying you could have an absentee station where you would still have people there. Can you explain the process there?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Foster, a polling place is the division's first choice, is to have a polling place where people actually physically go to a location, sign a precinct register. There's a board that checks your identification, issues you a ballot, and you put it in the ballot box. There have been times, and in the 2012 election, we were unable to secure a board in Tetitlik. And so Tetitlik had an absentee voting official there available on election day where people would come in and vote absentee in person versus there being a board that is then responsible for counting the ballots. The ballots are secured in an envelope and sealed, returned to the division for review and counting by a board. So that's the difference between an actual precinct and an absentee voting official.
Representative Ledoux.
So how would this bill affect absentee in-person voting, or I guess sometimes absentee in-person is called early voting, or maybe they're not sure.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, early voting takes place in the regional elections offices. There's always more than 1 official at those stations. Early voting is different from absentee in-person voting, as the voter's identity is, they present identification and their ballot, they sign a certificate that says they still live at this address, their ballot, their validation to cast that specific ballot is done right then and there in front of the front of the election board. Absentee in person may take place like at the at Squintna. Say Squintna has an absentee voting official there, and people, they'll have certain hours for 15 days, up to 15 days before the election through election day, and periodically people will come in to cast ballots, and in that case the ballots are then, people sign a register, they appear to vote, they're issued their district ballot, it's put in an envelope, it's sealed, and it's then sent to the division for review by a bipartisan board.
Follow up.
But for that absentee in-person voting, don't you still have to sign those things and put your birth dates on them and stuff like that?
Through the chairperson, like yes, you have voting? To. Yes. You have to provide your date of birth and then an identifier.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out whether this bill encompasses the absentee in-person voting, the early voting, and the regular absentee voting, or whether it's just when you go to the polls, just in the normal go-to-the-poll sort of situation.
It's my understanding through the chair, Representative Dew, that this is any type of voting, with the exception of by-mail voting, because you're voting from afar, that it's at your polling place, if you're voting absentee in person, if you're voting early through at a regional elections office. Forrest could perhaps clarify that if he...
Okay. And so the people under that scenario in an absentee by person station like Tetitlik, sorry about that, if they didn't have their ID with them, they wouldn't be able to be identified by the election official, because this raises the election officials from one to two.
Through the chair, Representative, that is correct. They would still be able to vote, and the ballot would still be treated the manner in which it's currently mannered. It's just that we would have to ensure that the information they provided on the envelope meets the criteria of statute, meaning that they have to provide at least their date of birth and one other identifier, like their driver's license number, Social Security number, last four, their Social Security number.
Thank you.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly appreciate the intent of the bill sponsor. I think it's a well-intended bill. I also believe, you know, as was mentioned, that one case of voter fraud is one too many. But, you know, a few cases of people who end up not voting, I think is probably, you know, not a good thing either. And so I just want to raise some of the issues that, you know, we have in rural Alaska. And I think, you know, certainly if you're motivated, there are ways to do things. But I also think that in a lot of situations, we're going to see people who say, well, you know, if we put up enough of these things, and I'll go through, you know, kind of my list, I think, you know, it's going to cause some people to say, well, you know, why bother? And I absolutely believe that voting is something that we should all take very seriously and that we should be very proud of. But I think the reality is that, you know, just when you put up a few obstacles, it makes things difficult. And the obstacles I refer to, you know, in Forrest, maybe if I can address, you know, some of these to you and just see what your response is. You know, the first, of course, there are three things, and the first one is you either need a photo ID, and for somebody from, you know, Savunga or Gamble or something, if they don't have a driver's license, which, you know, they're not required to have usually in the villages anyway, because most people drive a four-wheeler or something, but say they want to get a driver's license, then, you know, a ticket to know might cost $500. But this is a fairly easy one, because, you know, you can move down the list and say, well, I need two pieces of non-photo ID, and those two pieces could be a birth certificate or a tribal ID card, or a BIA card, same thing, essentially. But as I look at the Department of Health and Social Services website in terms of how do you get your birth certificate, and I think you raise a very good point, and I'll address this, but something I had not thought about was, in order to get your PFD, you need a birth certificate, and that's a very valid point, and I'll respond to that in a moment. But to get a birth certificate, the Department of Health and Social Services says that all requests, and this is in very bold letters here, all requests must include a copy of government-issued picture ID of the person requesting the birth certificate. So then you kind of get into this, you know, circular issue. But they do also say that if you don't have that, you can provide things like, you know, a passport, which, you know, 95% of folks in rural Alaska aren't going to have a passport because, you know, traveling to Anchorage is a very costly thing, and at a time when, you know, energy is sucking up half of people's income in rural Alaska, I just don't see people going to places like, you know, Mexico or Europe or South America. So, but you, it does say that you can, you know, use your BIA or a tribal identification card. So, and so that's the other part of this. If you don't have your photo ID, you can have two pieces of non-photo ID, and that is birth certificate and tribal ID. So if you do have a tribal ID, you can submit that to get your birth certificate. But the problem I see there is twofold. Number one, you know, it's going to take a few weeks. It says here wait at least 2 or 3 weeks, and if you're in Savunga or Gamble, it might be more like 3 or 4 weeks. And by then you've probably missed the cutoff to be able to vote, and so maybe they'll say, well, you know, at least I can vote next year, but in the meantime you've lost this opportunity. And when maybe the numbers are small, maybe you only affect 1% or 2% or 3% or 4% of the population, but you know, as we all know, you know, elections are determined often by 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%. So if you, and so then you go back to the question of tribal IDs and BIA cards, which I think a lot of people think, you know, in the villages, you know, everybody's got one of those. And when I was a kid, I got my BIA card. I lost my BIA card. I have no idea where it is to this day. And certainly I can reapply for that, but I know that that's going to, you know, take a while to get that. And then going back to the birth certificate issue, you know, we have a lot of elders, and this is the demographic that I'm really concerned about, and that is, you know, a lot of our elders, a lot of them are in their 70s and 80s, and you know, for some of them, maybe they were never issued a birth certificate. I know my grandmother was born in a small town called Haycock, which is now a ghost mining town, and nobody lives there, and I don't know if she ever had a birth certificate, you know, it's so anyway. So not, you know, and then not all communities have a tribal office that is even open because either the position's not filled or they don't have the little machine to make the card. So these are some of the issues that, you know, I see that we have in rural Alaska in terms of, you know, trying to meet up with this. But the one thing I can say, in the answer that I do feel is a good one, is what we currently have, and that is, you know, if you walk in and you know, you're a community of 150 people, everybody knows each other, and so you know, there's just no way, you know, that, you know, especially an elder who's lived there for, you know, 60-70 years, is not going to be known. And so those are some of the issues, and I know that I just threw out a whole lot of information there, but you know, I just want to raise these issues, and just, you know, I don't know if you have any response to any of that, but
through the chair, Representative Foster, you do bring up obviously some very valid points, and that's, you know, kind of when we drafted this bill, we didn't seek out to be disenfranchising to anybody and trying to prevent anyone from voting. And so that's why we did provide all these provisions. You know, if you don't have your photo ID, you can use the two non-photo identification forms. And if you don't have that, then you can be recognized by two election officials. I think this, if I could say something real quick, I think this bill has kind of gotten a little bit more of a bad rap than it really deserves, because it's, you know, the title of it is Photo ID for Voting. Well, that is a little misleading, and it makes you think automatically, oh, you can only vote if you have a photo ID, which if you go actually read through the bill, you see that that's not the case. Really, what the bill kind of does, right now you can use something as simple as your utility bill to go and vote. That's all you have to present to an election official as your identifier. Now, I posit this hypothetical situation, whereas let's say I live with three other, I'm a 27-year-old bachelor. Let's say I live with three other strapping, handsome 27-year-old bachelors as well, and we all, you know, we all share a house together. And let's say for money's sake, we all register a different utility in our name. So I have, you know, the electric bill, someone's got the cable, someone's got the water bill, and someone else has our internet bill. Let's say we're all registered to vote, but yet my three other roommates don't care about voting. They are registered, but they just don't care enough about elections. Theoretically, I could take each one of their utility bills in their name and go and vote for them, which is fraudulent. And at this point, I don't believe there's any way that you could actually detect that. And so this is kind of a situation where we're trying to clean this up a little bit, and we're trying to eliminate being able to use something as simple as that for voting. And so that's why we have the two official government issued identification forms of non-photo identification forms, such as your birth certificate, your hunting and fishing license. I mean, as long as it's issued by a branch of the government and it's official document, that's acceptable under this bill. And so that kind of, I guess I went off on a little tangent there, unfortunately. I'm sorry about that. But that's where we were going with that. And then lastly, obviously, the election official provision. There's a case that I actually provided an article for in the bill packet in I believe it's in Virginia, or I think maybe it's New York, where election officials have actually just been convicted of fraud, of orchestrating of mass voter fraud. That's cost, that's had a real impact on some of these elections out there. And right now, under the identification waiver provision that's currently in statute, there's really no responsibility taken by the election official. You don't know who's identifying this person. They're just saying, oh, yeah, hey, there's Steve. He can vote. And so what ours tries to do is, first of all, bumps it from 1 to 2, so it kind of shores things up there, so there's not going to be any collusion between an election official, or at least it's going to be much more difficult to orchestrate. And then the election officials are then also required to sign by that person's name in the register, so if, it was found out that that ballot was fraudulently cast, you'd have right there exactly the two people that were responsible for conducting this, or for allowing this voter fraud to occur. So I guess that's, I don't know if did I answer any of your address any of your concerns. I mean,
and to an extent, Representative Foster, if you do have something, I would like to remind everyone of the time. We have a lot of people here, and we do want to get them started. I'd like here by 2:30, but please feel free to respond.
Absolutely. Oh no, I'm good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Forrest. What we're going to do is going to start with public testimony. Because we have several people here and online, please, we do want to try to get out of here at 3. Please try to limit to around 3 minutes each. We do want you to say your piece, so I don't have a timer up here. I'm not going to start beeping on you, but just be considerate of the people after you. I'm going to start right here at the top of people inside the room with us. William Martin with the Alaska Native Brotherhood, would you please make your way forward? And following William will be Mary Graham, so just be prepared for to come up after William. Please state your name, your affiliation, and your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is William Martin. I am the Grand President of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. Having been elected to that office at our 100th anniversary convention last fall in Sitka, Alaska. And I'm really pleased that you're allowing us time to testify on this important bill. The Alaska Native Brotherhood was founded 101 years ago for the express purpose of gaining citizenship, the right to vote, education, health care, and other issues. And since we've gained that right of citizenship and the right to vote, we have exercised it with a great determination, so that Native peoples in Alaska have consistently voted at a higher rate than the rest of Alaska, and it's something that we're proud of. A good example is in outcome of the vote was the election of Senator Murkowski. She had the backing of all the Natives in Alaska because of the things that she had done for us, and so we vehemently rallied behind her, and she openly gave us credit, the Alaska Natives, for getting her over the hump to be elected to be the senator of the state on a write-in campaign. We feel that this vote and this bill is not good for our people because, as Representative Foster has stated, it may eliminate people from double voting or fraud in voting, but it would also eliminate a lot of people from exercising their right to vote. There are many people who are my age group that actually don't have ID cards. The ID card is not required when we go for health care at search or to vote in our tribal elections because we have our own cards. There's no picture on them. But we also, people in the villages know each other. As Representative Foster eloquently stated, that there is a great knit of people within the villages. Everybody knows each other. And so I'm here today as the president of A&B to ask you to reconsider and to not let this bill pass. It will hinder people from voting, and that would be simply wrong, is to put in place a bill that would keep people from exercising their right to vote. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to vote to express my opinion.
Thank you. Any questions for William? Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Martin.
Yes.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm very impressed with what you're saying. I agree with you. I might also add that even in large cities, our precincts are sufficiently small that the election board knows who we are. So it's not just in rural Alaska, but the same effect will happen even in urban Alaska. And I don't want to see anybody lose their right to vote myself.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that is absolutely correct. If I didn't have an ID and went to my precinct to vote, hoping that two people would know who I am, I would be tough out of luck because in every election that I voted, and here in Juneau at the Salmon Creek polling place, I've seen five or six people there, and not one of them knows who I am, nor do I know who they are. So that's one of the things that I would like to impress on the people, is that it's not necessarily true that somebody at the precinct will know you. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you.
Please, Mary, if you would come forward, state your name, your affiliation, and your testimony. Freda Westman will be following with the Alaska Native Sisterhood.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mary Graham. I'm a Juneau resident, Alaska resident for 30 years, and since I retired, I became an election worker. And so I am not in favor of this bill. I don't think Alaska's elections procedures as they are now really create problems. I'm a little worried about being maligned that I'm going to collude so that people can vote who aren't registered to vote as an election worker. My experience being on the election board is these are citizens who work a really long, long day, and our whole point of being there is to make sure that everybody votes. And one of the points that keeps being made, well, this won't make anybody not vote because you can always vote a question ballot. My analogy for a question ballot is now I have to go to the principal because I forgot my pencil. It's not the normal flow. When you're standing in line and you get your ballot and you get to put it in the machine, you got to go over to the side. You got to have an election worker with you. You got to fill out all the paperwork. Yes, it happens. Yes, it gets voted, but it's kind of what Representative Foster was saying there. Now we're going to start putting little fences in front of my ability to vote. And just as a personal example, there is a person in my precinct in Juneau in the general election who ran in at lunch hour, is digging through her purse looking for her ID, and she's like, oh, you know, worried that she's going to have to go home and come back. We knew her, you know. I knew her personally. I was able to reassure her. I know you personally. I can vouch that, yes, your name is right here on the register. I know this is you. I don't think it needs to be two election workers. I think the system that we have right now works very well. Personally, you know, maybe on a personal note, I think this whole idea is not coming out of Alaska. I think it's coming out of some other intentions on a national level, and Alaska doesn't need to buy into it. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions, I appreciate it. After Freda, Beth McEwen, you'll be with the Alaska Association of Municipal Clerks. Feel free to come up afterwards. Thank you. Please state your name, your affiliation, and your testimony.
Thank you very much, Chairman Pruitt. My name is Frida Westman. I'm a 56-year resident of Alaska. I am the grand president for the Alaska Native Sisterhood, a 100-year-old organization. I serve alongside Bill Martin. We were both elected to office in Sitka this past fall at the 100th convention. Please hear me. I speak on behalf of many people. I speak on behalf of Alaska Native Sisterhood, an organization that worked for voting rights for Alaska Native people, not just for one or two people, all Alaskans, all Alaska Natives. There are people documented in our history of our organization who went door to door to get donations from their neighbors, to send people to the Capitol here to lobby on behalf of Alaska Native people to gain the right to vote. This is something that our organization is very proud of. We are not just sitting on our laurels for gaining this right to vote. We are continuing to do the work of Alaska Natives for Alaska Native people to better the lives of Alaska Native people, which is the mission of our organization. This bill, House Bill 3, even though you assure me that the intention is not to disenfranchise, it surely does. There are people who will not vote a question ballot. My vote should count as much as any of you on the committee's vote. It is one of the greatest equalizers in our whole America, not just Alaska, the right to vote. If I have to vote a question ballot because I do not have a valid form of ID, that will put me in another class of citizens. I am in the same class of citizens as you all. And many Alaska Natives live in rural Alaska who do not have access to voter identification or IDs, photo IDs. This would put them in a class where they would have to vote a question ballot. Nobody wants to vote a question ballot. I'm what is probably referred to in the Division of Elections as a super voter. I vote in every election, municipal, state, national. I have always used my voter card when I go to the polls. And why should I need anything else? I hope that you will vote to do not pass this bill. It surely will disenfranchise the people that I stand for on here today on behalf of them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Freda. Any questions for Freda? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I come from the Northwest, from Nome, and I represent Western Alaska and the interior and the Copper Center areas, and not as familiar with Southeast, but we all come together when we go to AFN, and we all know each other, and we all work together, and I just had a question, and that is, up north, we have lots of folks who are in one village and they marry somebody in another village and they move to that village, and therefore in that situation it's not as easy as walking into your tribal office and saying, look me up on the rolls right there and please print me out a photo ID. But and that's very common thing, you marry in and you go to another village and therefore, and so in Southeast, I'm assuming what would happen then is you would need to call or send a fax request or do what would be the process if you can't just walk into your tribal office and you have to go that extra step of, okay, now I've got to, somehow do this from a distance. Do you have to be in person? How does that work? Are you familiar with that?
I'm not very familiar with that, but I have applied for identification through my local tribal office. And this bill does not make clear what is considered a tribe. I have heard from people who refer to Alaska Native corporations as tribes. There's just not a good understanding of what kind of agency and organization. We all get mixed. Many times our organizations are very mixed up by a lot of people's understanding of what they are. If people are unfamiliar with the name of the health corporation or the name of the tribal entity or the name of the ANCSA regional corporation or the village corporation, it's all a jumble to people. And so, yes, it would be cumbersome to get a copy of the tribal ID. And why should Alaska Natives need to present a tribal card to vote? We are citizens of this state of Alaska. We should not have to present a tribal card to vote. That nobody here would want to present something that says that they are, Caucasian in order to vote. It's disgusting, actually. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Beth would be the next one. Following Beth, I believe it's Andrea Sesson with ANS Camp 70, if you'd be on board next. Please put your name on the record and your affiliation and your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Beth McEwen, for the record. I am currently employed as the deputy city clerk for the city and borough of Juneau. However, I'm not here representing the city, and am here representing myself and as a member of the Alaska Association of Municipal Clerks. In your materials that you have received previously is a resolution from the Alaska Association of Municipal Clerks expressing our concern and request that this bill does not pass. There are a number of concerns with this bill, but due to limited time and the fact that many of these concerns were already raised by previous speakers and by Representative Foster, I won't go into great detail on those. If for some reason this bill does pass, I would ask that the amendment be made to only require one election official to actually personally identify the voter when they come either in the absentee in-person voting station or in the polling place on election day itself, for all the reasons that have previously been discussed. It's evident that one person, if you personally know an individual, you know that they're not bringing in somebody else's utility bill or some other form of non-photo ID. I have a niece who is Down syndrome. She's never going to have a driver's license. She's never going to necessarily have a photo ID unless she chooses to travel out of her hometown and needs it for getting on an airplane. Her right to vote is extraordinarily important to her. She loves going and voting on election day. If she didn't have her ID, I think that, which to her bus pass with her photo on it, it's a city issued bus pass. It's a photo ID, and to her, that is one of her most cherished possessions. However, the way the bill currently is written, municipal IDs are not acceptable. So if you are going to require a photo ID, I would suggest an amendment to have it so that municipal-issued photo IDs would also be acceptable. And I would, again, refer you to the resolution from the Municipal Clerks Association and ask that this bill does not pass. Thank you.
Representative Keller.
Yeah. I'm sorry I drifted a little bit. You say you work for the municipal...
For the city and borough of Juneau. However, I'm not authorized to speak on their behalf.
No, I wasn't going to ask that, but I just wanted to ask you if you see the value in, like, if somebody wanted to vote within the city, there's certainly a value making sure that they're a citizen or a resident of Juneau, right? I mean, it's kind
there
of a leading question, but I was just sitting here thinking that we do not want to put any barriers in front of anybody to vote. But I would ask you and the previous testifiers, you know, I wish that I had thought to ask you too. But, you know, in the organizations you're in, you don't want just anybody coming in and voting. You know, there's a real value to having a confidence that the people that are voting are, in fact, in this case, Alaskans. So I don't know if you'd like to respond.
And through the acting chair, Representative Keller, that is correct. The city and borough election code does require that anyone voting in our municipal elections has been a resident for 30 days prior to the election. Their name will appear on the voting register. If their name does not appear, then they are asked to vote a question ballot. And nobody likes to vote a question ballot. Like the previous speakers already said, it's like having to go to the principal's office because you forgot your pencil. It's kind of a denigrating sort of thing to many people. Not that it is, but that's the public perception. Many voters have said to me, well, if I have to vote a provisional ballot or a question ballot, I'm just not even going to vote. And that's their option. But it is one of those public perception things that a lot of people look down upon.
Thank you for your good
thank guess. You, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Through the chair.
No, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Beth. Andrea, and hopefully I've got that right. Hopefully I'm reading it right. With ANS Camp 70. Okay, I had a yes down here. Thank you. We will recognize that you are here. Thank you for that. Following Andrea was Jan Trigg, also with ANS Camp 70. After Jan will be Travis Lewis from Elfin Cove, Alaskans for Alaska. Please put your name on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the House Judiciary Committee. My name is Jan Trigg, and I am president of the Alaska Native Sisterhood Camp 70, Glacier Valley, or one of the local camps. I'm here to urge you to vote do not pass on House Bill 3. As ANB Grand President Bill Martin stated, 100 years ago, ANB and ANS were founded initially to gain citizenship for Alaska Native people. ANB and ANS went on to fight for the right to vote. In 1945, our sister Elizabeth Paratrovich stood in front of our territorial legislature to encourage passage of House Bill 14 to make discrimination against the law against in our great state. ANB and ANS continue today to fulfill our mission to better the lives of Native people and their families and to fight for civil rights. HB 3 discriminates against rural Alaskans. It creates an impediment to the most basic democratic practice as citizens. The homeless, the homebound, returning veterans, the elderly, people of color, and college students would all be vulnerable to this new law. Citizens in rural Alaska are primarily Alaska Native. This legislation would unfairly impact many rural Alaskans, places where obtaining a photo ID may not be possible. Alaska does not have an issue with voter fraud. Our current laws are sufficient. We should not require more stringent requirements to vote at a polling booth than are required for a person to register to vote. It's wrong to pass laws that block some Alaskans from voting and to deny them the opportunity to participate equally in our democracy. Again, I encourage you to vote do not pass on House Bill 3, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Any questions from committee? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Travis, is Travis here? Following Travis, it looks like on the phone, we have Joshua Decker with ADU Alaska. If you'll be ready after Travis is through, Travis, if you'd please put your name on the record and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Travis Lewis. I'm the current president, vice president of Alaskans for Alaska. I'm the previous vice chairman of the Elfin Cove Community Corporation. Basically, that's our city hall out there. I have a lot of respect for the people in the room, the testimony that you heard. I'm going to change things a little bit. We are absolutely for HB3. 2010, we had an election there. The census said there were 20 people in Elfin Cove, year-round residents, yet we got 68 registered voters there. The chairman of the board walked out into the crowd and picked at random who was allowed to vote and who wasn't, just passing out ballots. My father has lived in Elfin Cove since 1963. He wasn't allowed to vote. I have a letter here from a member of the Fishermen Association that's like about a paragraph and a half I'd like to read. And then I have several comments I'd like to make. Responding to Gail Fumii, from her 2005 letter, there was 288,000 registered voters in the state of Alaska, yet there were only 252,000 people of voting age in the state of Alaska. And I can guarantee you it's somewhat worse now. Unlike my neighbors up north, we have a lot of tourism trade. I'm not against charter boats or tourism, but I am against people living outside of the state running my community. Since 1996, we've only had one chairman that is a local year-round resident. Many of the lodge owners have decided that they're going to bring their crews and themselves. They've got their families registered to vote. They come and they vote in our elections. They come in May. They're gone by August. This stack right here, I hope that you guys got the packet I sent to you Monday, has numerous articles in the local newspapers of these people being arrested and cited for falsification of documents, fishing license violations. And it all started out with that voter registration card. They come to Elfin Cove. They say, I live at this mailbox in Elfin Cove. And then the rest of the state thinks that they're from Elfin Cove. And some of these people have gotten into leadership positions throughout the state as president of the Southeast Conference, for example, vice president of SEGO, Southeast Alaska Charter Boat and Guide Services. If you read the paper, I'm talking about the same group. So as a veteran, I want to say that when I got out of the military, I had all kinds of ID on me. It's pretty hard for me to understand in this day and age how a person could not have proper identification. How did you get here from Sitka? Did you ride the ferry or come on Alaska Airlines? My children are native. They go to school in Hoonah. We spend the summers in Elfin Cove now. I can't get them to search here in Juneau without IDs. I'm kind of at a loss at who in this day and age doesn't have proper identification. And I know 100 years ago that was a big problem, but in this day and age, I can't even rent a hotel room here in Juneau without a picture ID card. So voting is a sacred right that I really agree with my Native brothers that a lot of us fought very hard to have that right. Representative Foster, I've got a set of ivory jump wings here. Your dad was one of my heroes. I used to teach National Guard kids up in your area. I'm familiar with your area, and I do realize it is hard for some folks to get IDs. But as time goes on, the requirements and the standards to be a citizen of the state are more complicated. We have a large group of people that come to Southeast Alaska and are only here a couple of months. If the mayor of Juneau lived in New York, these road conditions would be somewhat different here. And the relationship that Juneau had with our neighbors like Juneau and Sitka, Ketchikan, and all the rural villages would be quite different. So I'm in full support of HB 3, and furthermore, I'd like to see the voter registration regulations take the whole intent clause out, you intend to come back to Alaska. I've got people in my village been intended to come back for 20 years now, and they've yet to ever live here. Any document you look at, they are residents of other states with the exception that they have a voter registration card in Elfin Cove. I invite anyone to come across the street to the courthouse and try to help me show how to prove intent over there. I've been trying for 5 years now, and it's quite difficult. I'd like to see that taken out. I've been working with the state troopers, and one of the things that keeps popping up from the commissioning officers down all the way to the lowly fish and game cop, that the statutes in Alaska, there's such a gray area that it's really hard for them to prosecute anybody, and the whole division of elections is kind of a new thing for them. They don't really have an enforcement agency. So if a person like myself calls up Gail and says, hey, we got six people that don't live here claiming to be voters here, well, they've already got cards. So on our elections in Elfin Cove, it would have helped us a lot if they had to show a picture ID, because now 5-6 years later, while I'm in court, I could prove that they still have out-of-state driver's license, their vehicles are still registered in other states, their kids are still going to school in other states, their property taxes are still in other states, so on and so forth. So I'm not trying to take anybody's vote right away. I fought hard for this country to make sure we all could vote. But it's gotten out of hand down here in Southeast Alaska. When you take these little villages that have 20, 30 people, and then they've got over 100 registered voters out there, something's got to give. Because in my village right now, if you're not an employee of one of these lodge owners, you do not work on any state-funded projects, because they control the board of directors out there. And if you want to vote on a grant that you wrote to the state of Alaska, you better be in their graces, or you will not work there. And a lot of the local families, including mine, have had to move to other small communities. We didn't go far. We're in Huna. We're in Haines. Some of them are in Ock Bay. But they've had to actually move to conduct business. So I appreciate your time, and I'd really like to have any questions anybody has for me.
Representative Keller.
First off, thank you for your service.
Likewise.
And the voting right is something that's sacred and very important to all of us, and that's a testimony that's consistent no matter where you're at on this bill. I think I heard you say that, and I may have drifted and missed part of it, 288,000 registered voters. When was that?
That was year 2005. I can't find anything more current than that, but I am looking right now.
And you said that there were only 252,000 that are eligible voting
age. People over the age of 18.
So that's kind of hard to come up with 114% of vote. What I'm saying is, what I would like you to do, if you would, is we aren't going to have time today, but talk with Gail Fanumia. You know who she is.
Yes, sir.
And so that we can get that number confirmed or explained, or if, you know, in other words, if we made a mistake, we'd like to know on the record. You know, when you put something like that on the record, that's really something. And I, if you, that's up to the chair. But
yeah, and Ms. Fanumi, I may have a response to that, because I mean I'm doing the math in my head too, and we may be a little off, because I'm thinking that means there's about 300,000 people under the age of 18 or so. But she's coming up, and if it's okay, I'd like for her to maybe respond to.
Absolutely. I have the email. I just don't, I have to come by one of your offices and give it to you.
Through the chair.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, I did not mean to impugn you in any way. I just want to make sure we got it straight.
The way I understood it was, out of the people that voted that year, that there was more people registered to vote than there were people of legal age to vote. It's the way I understood the document.
Ms. Fanumia, if you have numbers or can speak to that, we would appreciate you doing that.
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I don't have current number or the numbers that Mr. Lewis is referencing, but right now, voting age population in the state of Alaska is 522,853. There are 486,498 registered voters in the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Ms. Fanumia. Please, Mr. Lewis, and make it brief as we
have. Yes, I understand you have time and trains. All I was going to say was I would like to bring a packet to each one of your offices. We were geared up for Monday. I've been traveling, and I didn't have a chance to drop a packet off. Normally, I'd have a packet in front of you. So I'll turn in my information that confirms everything, and hope to hear from you soon. If there's anything else I can do to help, please let me know.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you guys taking all these heat rounds. It's not easy.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. We'll go on to the phones. Joshua Decker from ADU Alaska, and then following Joshua will be Natasha Singh with the Tanana Chiefs Conference. You are the last two. Joshua, are you there? And please state your name, your affiliation, and your testimony.
I am, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
I can. Please continue.
Thank
Thank you. My name is Joshua Decker. I am a staff attorney at the ACLU of Alaska. We submitted written testimony on this bill to the committee on April 3, and I believe you should have it in your packets. To quickly distill our concerns about this bill, the committee's heard a lot of testimony today about why it's a poor policy choice. There are also significant constitutional concerns. Voting is a fundamentally important right. It's even more important than a right to a PFD or to public assistance, and it's strongly protected by both the U.S. and Alaska constitutions. This bill, in our opinion, imposes unconstitutional burdens on voters, particularly voters who do live in rural villages and who don't have further identification, such as driver's licenses, because the state has set up a scheme under which they are not required to have those IDs. This bill is also, as we note in our letter to the committee, very similar in fatal ways to a Texas photo ID law that the courts invalidated as recently as August 2012. To quickly just illuminate the discrete constitutional concerns, the provision for requiring voters to get photo IDs or other forms of government identification, this bill does not provide that those IDs would be given at no charge, and because prospective voters would have to pay for them, that would be an unconstitutional poll tax prohibited by the constitutions. This bill, as well, strangely strikes away the best indicia of identification, which is personal knowledge. Rather than keeping the current system of just one poll worker recognizing an individual, the bill doubles it to two. And for all these reasons, particularly because voting fraud, while it's a serious issue, is not widespread, we attached a letter from Ms. Funumini dated January 17 to our testimony, and at least as of January 17th, the Division of Elections was only aware of one fraudulent voter throughout the entire history of Alaska. I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee may have, and we encourage the members of the committee to not pass this bill.
Any questions for Joshua? All right, well, thank you, Joshua. I apologize. I had here that you were from the ADU. Thank you for the ACLU's presentation. Natasha Singh, you are our last presenter or testimony today. Please state your name, affiliation, and your testimony if you are there.
Hi. Hello. My name is Natasha Singh. I'm general counsel for Tenena Chiefs Conference, which is a consortium of 37 tribes and an Alaska Native health entity for Interior Alaska. I'm also a Stevens Village tribal court judge, and Stevens Village is a very small community in the interior with less than 100 residents. At TCC, we serve Fairbanks and the surrounding villages, so like the Alaska legislature, in carrying out our goals, we have to serve both an urban and rural base. We, like the other Native nonprofits, are charged with communicating to those that do not understand the unique circumstances faced by rural residents. Like most issues, voting in rural Alaska is different than voting in urban Alaska, especially in small villages that make up the interior. Villages and Native corporations, both nonprofit and profit, have been following this bill very closely because if passed, it has the potential to cause serious detriment to the rural population's ability to vote. Placing more restrictions on Alaskans will not increase voting. The justification used to prevent voter fraud with increased restrictions in the lower 48 does not apply in Alaska, where we have a very low percentage of illegal and non-citizen population. We also have very little documented case of voter fraud, and as I've heard today, actually only one documented case. So for us, there is no reasonable explanation for HB 3. I understand out of the total voting population, we had about 59% turnout. In Anchorage, voting turnouts are higher than the state average, such as District 23, which is about 64.6%. But rural districts, such as District 37, only had about 46% turnout rate. The national rate, I believe, is around 57%, so the average rate and the urban rates in Alaska are not good, but still not below national average. PCC believes Alaska legislators should be very concerned with the extremely low voter turnout for Alaska Natives in rural Alaska and should take action to increase voter turnout, not decrease it. The proposals in HB 3 will likely decrease voter turnout in rural Alaska. First, not all village residents have an ID. While it may be very hard for some of you to understand that haven't spent time in the day-to-day activities of a village resident, you don't really need an ID in village life without banks and troopers, and most significantly, where everyone knows each other. It is certainly not a lack of motivation to vote that hinders a rural resident from paying over $500 for a flight to an urban hub to obtain an ID. It's more to do with the fact that $500 is a lot of money. Village residents, if they do have an ID, do not normally carry them around the village, even on election day. Requiring two election officials to waive the ID requirement rather than just one will further hinder the Alaska Native right to vote. True, most of our villages regularly have two or more elections officials, but just in a poll of four of our villages recently, just calling them, asking them what's the usual circumstance, three out of the four stated that it would be a burden for them and a significant problem when there's a funeral, because the whole village goes to the funeral, and this actually happened in Holy Cross recently. So PCC strongly believes that the right to vote is a fundamental right to Americans and the most necessary factor of democracy, and we agree that the integrity of the voting process needs to be protected. But it's a fallacy to believe that citizens are discouraged to vote because of the existence of voter fraud. If Alaskans aren't voting, it may be because they are discouraged that elected officials are representing outside influences like large corporations and the American Legislative Exchange Council. For further insight, this committee should rely strongly on the views of the Bush Caucus, who represent the rural residents, and understand the reasoning behind TCC and other Native corporations' opposition to the bill. If this body fails to consider the opinions of the Bush Caucus, in the least it should listen to the Division of Legal and Research Services opinion, which states the bill could be unconstitutional under the Alaska Constitution. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Singh? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Singh, for your testimony here. With that is everything that we have for today. I will do one quick thing here. The email that we did respond, I think it's probably appropriate to clarify, Mr. Lewis meant, I believe, to say 488,000 registered voters and 454,000 people of the age to be able to vote. Probably an important clarification. And what I would ask of the division is to return on, when we do return on Monday, we are going to hold this over until Monday. You know, the email here does state that many Alaskans choose to maintain their Alaska residency even if they are currently live outside the state. I believe that's what Mr. Lewis was trying to get at. If you could respond to that in some manner, and if this legislation it could actually assist in that discussion, which is where Mr. Lewis was, I think, intending to go. And that, I think, would help edify the committee on Monday. With that, we will not be having our meeting tomorrow. We will instead be holding off until Monday, where we will hear the reclassification of certain drug offenses, which is SB 56, because I believe that has now been, will have been sent over to us by that point in time. HB 57, which is the Entity Transactions Act, and being no other, nothing else in front of us, we will go ahead and adjourn for today.
Thank you.